This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The biggest transfer of wealth in human history is here. Boomers spent a lifetime hoarding their cash in real estate and stocks and pensions. At a time when everything was cheap, their houses have appreciated 500%, their stocks are up 2,800%, and that means they've accumulated a lot, nearly $80 trillion of wealth, which is like half of all of the wealth in the whole country. Boomers, they make up about 20% of the population, but have half of the money. Right now, the youngest boomers are hitting 60. The oldest boomers are pushing 80. Life expectancy in the U.S. is about 76 years old. So do the math. The richest generation in human history is hitting the life expectancy age, and their $80 trillion will be flowing to younger generations, Gen X and millennials, who have different mindset when it comes to spending and investing. Today on Dumb Money, the investment opportunities that will be unlocked with the great wealth transfer.
This is Dumb Money Live.
Hey there, Dave here along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. Quick call to action somewhere on the interface that you're looking at right now. There is a like button. Take a second, find it, smash it, help the almighty algorithm find us. Chris, Jordan, the great wealth transfer is just getting started. The first $16 trillion is expected to be transferred within the decade, around $80 trillion in all. We know that the majority of this is going to be coming from the wealthiest 10% of households, but even if your parents or grandparents are not in that top 10%, and are not going to be transferring generational wealth down to you, you actually can benefit by making strategic investments in the things the top 10% of Gen Xers and millennials will be throwing their money at, right? And that's what we're talking about, being prepared for the wealth transfer and thinking about what is going to benefit the most by having an extra $80 trillion unlocked into the economy. I mean, I have mine already in place. What about you guys?
Dude, there's so much to think about here. We always talk about generational opportunities as traders and investors. Well, this is by definition a generational opportunity. Divine investments, like, this has got to be the biggest generational opportunity of
our
lifetime.
It literally has it in the name, the generational wealth transfer. And we're always looking for those opportunities.
It's big. And like, this is one of those things where you really have to have a prepared mind. You have to do the homework. If you're not thinking about this as an investor, what the hell are you doing? Because $80 trillion, are you curious? Like, just think about that. We all know, we talk about this all the time as social arb traders, with change comes opportunity. And here's $86 trillion of change. Like, literally $86 trillion of change. What is the opportunity that comes to that? Do we think that people that are, on average, 50 to 55 years younger than those people that they're inheriting money from are going to behave and do the same sort of things with their money? Absolutely not. Zero chance of that.
No.
There's numerous opportunities here. Numerous. Like, exciting ones. Now, this is a big theme of mine over the next 10, 15 years. I think some of the questions are, how do you think about timing on this, guys? Because if I guess it's starting here in the next few years, right? So theoretically, you could
really, it's already started. So what I was saying is that you've got like, over the course of the next decade, you've got a 40% increase in Americans turning 60, like being over 60 years old. So that's a pretty big increase. I think maybe it started like 2 years ago, but basically until 2030, you've got a 40% increase in America.
Yeah, and
years old.
the boomer generation will be fully retired or hit that retirement age over the next 5 years or so, right?
Correct.
And then the on the upper end of the scale, they're hitting 80 and they're going past life expectancy, which statistically means that money has to go somewhere.
Yes. And like, if you have a bunch of bets on this trade, which ones do you start with, right? Like, which ones hit first? Let's just talk about, like, there's one that we've talked about forever, right? Like, yeah. Dave, and this is one you're idiot.
This is mine. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I've established my, the percentage of my net worth that I think is appropriate into an asset class that I think that current and future generations are going to value more than existing asset classes such as gold, and that is Bitcoin. I have a lot of Bitcoin, little Ethereum, but I think that, you know, Bitcoin is my generational wealth transfer investment.
I'm with you, Dave. I can't disagree with you. I have the same bet in my portfolio. It's not something I think about. It's not something I trade around. It's there, man. It's going to be there for 20 years. That bet is set in stone. Love it or hate it. So, like, I'm with you. I 100% agree with you. Unless something catastrophic happens to crypto, Bitcoin, something regulatory, I think that's a pretty decent bet on this generational wealth transfer, right? People are going to want to have a piece of their portfolio in Bitcoin and crypto the same way that the oldies have a piece of theirs in gold. So I think it's not something that plays out over the next few weeks and months, but it maybe not even years, but it's something that likely plays out over the next 10 to 20 years if you can have that sort of a mindset.
And I have another 10 to 20 year play, and it's probably one that you're thinking of too, because we've talked about this before. This is not new news.
What?
Tesla and robots taking over a lot of the healthcare concerns, and, you know, taking those 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds and helping them live.
Yeah, that obviously, like, we've hammered that in so many times. The humanoid trade actually is a huge, huge part of this. I think humanoids will become I don't want to, like, say that it displaces the cultural purchasing behavior of how we kind of always thought about owning an automobile as a big purchase that exists outside of a home, because a home is really big. So it, like, a car was like your first big purchase well before you purchase your home. I think moving enough into the future, for a lot of people, a car isn't going to be thought of in that manner. I think it still will be for some people, but not for everyone. I think the concept of having a humanoid, and we're obviously now talking about the mid-2030s, right, before we get there. But I think that concept is something that will become ubiquitous. It will start as something that feels luxurious. It will cost, you know, $20,000, $25,000, maybe $30,000 at that time. Could be less, could be $15,000 by then. But it's certainly something that is more expensive than purchasing an iPhone, right? Less expensive than purchasing a home. But I think it's something that every human on earth is going to want. If we push forward 10 to 15 years and kind of get into that robotics revolution that I know is coming. So yeah, I think the only publicly traded company that you could really trade right now with confidence around that humanoid sector would be Tesla. Right. And in that tweet thread that I have, it's pinned on my Twitter. It's all about Tesla's humanoid trade. Right. It's like 15 tweets. It takes you through the entire narrative of the thesis. And for people that are really want to get into it, I suggest just starting with that tweet thread at Chris Camillo. I'm with you, Dave. I'm there on Tesla. That said, you know what? I'm not invested in Tesla right now. I am not. Could you believe that? I am, like, barely. Everyone's been asking, did you put your trade on yet? I did not. I'm going to roll the dice with this, guys. I'm going to roll the dice for a little bit longer.
You don't think that 140 was the low? And
no, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it wasn't the low. I'm not saying it was. I'm not saying that I'm going to be. I know that I might be forced into buying Tesla $20 or $30 higher. I get that, and I'm willing to roll the dice and have to put on my Tesla long trade. $20, $30, maybe even $40 higher than it is today. I'm willing to take that risk because I just have other bets that I want to be in right now for the next, call it 2 to 4 months. Okay. I just have other places for my money. There's a huge opportunity cost on money right now. Interest rates are high. I'm already borrowing a crap load on margin, right? And I'm paying like 7.5% or 7.7%. on margin. So for me to put more money into Tesla, I have to either pull money out of another position or I have to start borrowing money at 7.5%. I would rather wait a few more weeks to a few more months or longer to put on my big Tesla trade. Listen, I might be making a mistake, but it's a decision that I've made. We'll see how it goes.
So what is your generational wealth play?
So I have two themes here, two big themes. I'm only going to discuss one of them because, to be quite honest, Jordan was the one that identified the other theme that I'm into. So I'm going to let him unveil that theme. But when Jordan unveils it, I have three specific trades in what I know is going to be Jordan's theme that I want to discuss if he doesn't discuss them. So, all right, my theme is 86% of, I guess, millennials, Gen Xers, Gen Zers do not intend or have not and do not retain the same wealth advisor as their parents when they inherit money. That's huge. Almost 90% when they inherit money choose not to stay with the old dude who's been managing your parents' money for 40 years, right? And charging them insane amounts of money. Too. They're not staying with that guy at Merrill Lynch or wherever. That is fascinating to me because another stat, I don't have it right in front of me. I sent you guys an article earlier this morning, but I thought it was really interesting that, let me see if I could find it here. Here it is.
Is it how Americans plan to spend their inheritance?
Yeah. So 76% of those receiving an inheritance plan to save or invest it. So maybe the biggest theme is not what people are going to spend their money on, but where people are going to sit their money. So if we have $86 trillion, whatever that number is, being transferred. By the way, we know that a lot of that transfer is tied up in real estate. So it's not like we're transferring, nearly, $100 trillion in cash. That's not happening. But it's still tens and tens of trillions of dollars in actual liquid type assets that are being transferred. So who's making money off those assets today? And who's going to be making money off those assets tomorrow? If we know that 86% do not intend to keep their family's wealth advisor, where is the younger generation investing? And we already have the answer to that. A larger portion of the younger generation are self-directed investors. They have their money with, and there's really two go-to places here, right, guys? You basically have Schwab, who has rolled up the entire retail investor space, right? They've rolled up everyone. Most recently, TD Ameritrade. Who also rolled up Scottrade. So they basically own the vast majority of self-directed accounts in America. So Schwab will be a huge beneficiary, but maybe even a bigger beneficiary and one that's probably more levered is Robinhood. And I haven't owned Robinhood in a really long time. And I know Robinhood has had a good, few months here. They're back up to $17 a share. I think that Robinhood, enough people would have forgotten why they hate Robinhood, in the next 10, 15 years.
Yes,
and Robinhood,
yes,
I agree with your thesis.
And I also, we were invested in Robinhood before it was a public company. We got out. I'm also eyeing Robinhood as an investment because they have a lot of interesting things going on. And the that whole new Robinhood Gold program, not only the gold credit card, but the 3% match on all IRA funds that you transfer to them. The starting soon, they're going to have 1% on every dollar you deposit. They're just going to give you an extra 1% on every dollar you deposit into their platform for an undetermined amount of time.
Now, you're not getting paid to say that because I know you work with them on this stupid credit card.
I'm not getting paid. I've never been paid by Robinhood ever. In fact, I've lost money in Robinhood stock. Robinhood owes me, but I have not been paid anything by Robinhood ever.
Oh my God! But you're doing the credit card stuff, I thought, with them, right? Or you just
It's not a paid partnership. They sent me the card before anyone else. I have it right here.
Okay.
Somewhere. It's still in the box. I put it back in the box.
By the way, I want to take a minute to tease something right now, because I am so floored by something that happened yesterday. Is that your card right there?
This is the card in the Louis Vuitton wallet that they sent me.
They sent you a Louis Vuitton wallet?
No. Yes. It's like the American Express.
That is
the,
so
black card
cheesy.
Comes with there.
Oh,
So this is a solid, it's 10 karat gold, solid gold card. It's pretty cool. But the coolest thing is it gives you 3% cash back, which on a pure cash back play in all categories. Yes, you can get 5% in random categories. I'm really excited about it as a product, and I'm excited about their stock because I feel like people are going to be opening accounts. And this is not paid. I've never been paid by them on this channel or on any other channel. I actually really am a fan of what they're doing right now.
Dave, I can't use a card that looks like that. I just think it's so cheesy. And also, then
they have another one that is not solid gold.
What is gold? Like, there's nothing wrong with the gold. Like, my Amex is, I've just used the gold Amex. It's,
I know, but it just feels so douchey when they make it heavy. Is it like one of those heavy?
That's what they're
metal
doing
cards?
With all these cards now. Like, every single card that they send you now is like metal. People want that.
It is a heavy card. It's made of solid gold, but they send you one that's made of aluminum that is the same weight as your other metal credit cards. I think 16 grams. Why do I know so much about how much credit cards weigh? But it's the same weight as the X1 card because the Robinhood acquired X1.
Right.
And
Dave,
they like this new product.
My favorite credit card is an ATM card. It's my Wells Fargo card that has like a beach and palm trees on it, and that's what I want. It makes me happy every time I look at it. Like, I don't.
Do they still do that where you can like make a credit card out of like I can have like my girls or something on a card?
It's the best, dude. That's what I want.
I don't know any bank that still does that.
Wells Fargo does. You see, you should bank with Wells Fargo, and I literally have a beach scene on my card. It's fantastic. I'm going to tease something for hopefully next week or the week after. I made $100,000 for doing nothing, for literally out of thin air. And I'm not going to tell you how, but
that sounds like a good episode title. I made $100,000 out of thin air, and I'm not going to tell you how until you watch this video.
I can't, Dave, in my entire life, I have never experienced anything like this. It's like 100x better than when you get like a crypto airdrop from an NFT out of nowhere for like a few thousand bucks. This is $100,000 that I'm literally getting sent to me this week for doing nothing. And any investor can do this. And I'm working the details with this company. Like, we've never promoted anyone on Dumb Money ever, but this might be the first thing. Because it doesn't cost any money. And you just get money. I'm going to tell you after the episode. I want to like work a deal with this company to like bring it to our community, because I think everyone in our community would be making like probably thousands of dollars, maybe more, tens of thousands. The reason why I'm making so much,
I think it's almost guaranteed if you actively, you know, are invested in stocks that you'll have something come out of it.
Okay, I'm going to tell you one thing. If you're watching this episode, subscribe. If for nothing else, when we do reveal what this company does, you'll get the information, because it's blowing my mind. I don't want to talk
about
it. I'm
intrigued. I have not subscribed to this channel yet. I think I'm going to. This sounds too good to be true.
Well, you're not allowed to ask people to subscribe. I can. But Dave, when I tell, I'm going to tell you later today, until I actually have the money wired to my bank account, I will not tell anyone about this except for you guys. But I will reveal it to the whole community the second that it's real and I actually see money getting wired into my account, because my mind is blown right now. Okay. That said, I think Robinhood and Schwab might actually be two of the most obvious beneficiaries over the next couple decades from this wealth transfer. Younger generations going to get their money. They're not going to necessarily put all of it into their self-directed trading account, but they're going to maybe put a lot of it into that account. And Robinhood has the advantage of also dealing with crypto, right? So I don't know. I think they're two big beneficiaries. Jordan, tell us about yours, because I have a few stock picks related to yours.
Yeah, so you can call this theme that that the wealth transfer doesn't go to the children, it goes to healthcare, right? And that, and I think it's reasonable that, so I was reading an article that basically kind of estimated that in retirement, every single individual in retirement is going to spend about, and it's an average, about $160,000. You double that for couples, so every married couple in retirement is going to spend $320,000 on their healthcare. And I think that's actually a pretty reasonable number, especially when you know, as you get older, you're going to run into lots of expenses and end of life care, things like that. And it's going to be the largest generation that's run into this, you know, right around the exact same size, the generation as the millennials, I think. You know, what's it, Dave? 70 something million baby boomers, and we've got 72 million millennials. So, I mean, a pretty significant portion of the United States population is going to be overspending from what they have currently been on healthcare. And so, you know, where do you invest? Chris probably has specific ones. I'm more broad, so I'll be in hospitals and insurance stocks. So, like, HCA, UHS, you know, just your big cap, you know, healthcare stocks, I think are, you know, for me at least, kind of safe, easy bets to make.
Yeah. And my note at the beginning of the show that the top 10% account for the large majority of the wealth transfer, I think your point is that bottom 50% is going to be outspending in healthcare. And so more money is going to be coming from the top 10% and going into things, I think, like Bitcoin, but I do agree completely that there's going to be a huge surge in cost as the very most expensive time for healthcare, the aging population, all hits at the same time.
Yeah, this is in many ways a social arb trade, even though it's one that has been kind of discussed and broadcast more broadly amongst the investor community. But I do think that sometimes investors don't pay attention to stuff like this because it's not right in front of their face. It's not something that they could trade this month or this week. And investors are lazy. They're impatient. If you're the type of investor that can say, you know what, I'm going to be alive for 10 or 20 years, and I'm willing to make some bets that have these massive tailwinds of the 80-something trillion dollars, I think it's a smart move. I have five stocks related to your sector, Jordan, that I think are interesting. I did not do deep research on these stocks. I'm just really surfacing these opportunities. Now, the reason for that is I would love the community. Maybe we can create a channel if any of our mods are listening in the dumbmoney.tv/Discord community. Maybe we could trade a wealth transfer, the great wealth transfer like channel, and we could just talk about it for the next 10, 15 years. Because this is going to be an ongoing social arb trade. So just a few names to think about here. Okay, think about this. One is AstraZeneca. Why AstraZeneca? AstraZeneca, actually, of all of the biotech companies, they are really focused on end of life and cancer treatments and lung treatments. These, like, if you look at their portfolio of drugs, they're really oriented towards like life-saving end-of-life type diseases. So I think AstraZeneca is really interesting. They actually have 120 phase two and phase three trials right now happening. 120. Okay. These guys have a monstrously big pipeline of drugs. And a lot of these drugs are focused on the aging population. So it's interesting. And yeah, they've had a good quarter. You saw that recent spike there.
Yeah.
Company's doing well. Number two, a company called Zomer Bionet. Okay. The stock symbol, by the way, the stock symbol is ZBH. What do? They make hip and knee replacement parts, basically. Okay. I mean, does it get better than that for an aging population?
That's great. So I would be interested to see what their market share is, because a lot of these hip and knee replacements, I mean, that is a very competitive business, by the way, that companies like Johnson & Johnson and Medtronic rule the roost in, you know, making those doctor-patient relations, or I'm sorry, those doctor-hospital relationships, and hospitals get locked into, you know, contracts with certain companies. And a lot of times Medtronic and Johnson & Johnson are kind of at the top of the list that get those expensive surgery.
Okay. But Jordan, these guys are monsters. They're a $24 billion company in that space. They're huge. They're like, it's specialty. Like that.
Yeah. I need to look into that. That's a good.
So here's what I really love about this company. They actually have, and they tout this, they have their own robot, a robot that is specialized in helping surgeons work on these elbow, shoulder, like knee, hip surgeries. So the robot actually, Jordan, like will hold your shoulder in place and help the surgeon do micro movements on these big, you know, ligament parts, right? As they're doing surgery on you, so, which is really interesting, right? So this company is all in on this space. In fact, the coolest thing that I saw about this company, ready for this? They just signed a deal to be the only medical partner of the pickleball like association. Okay. Because they benefit so much from all these people playing pickleball. Remember when we were looking for a pickleball trade? This is the pickleball company. These are the guys that are benefiting the most from all the pickleball injuries. I'm telling you, God. Dude, it like, we never did that episode, but if we did the pickleball episode, this would have been the company.
I love it, Chris. Also, here's another thing. So they're down from, you know, some of their highs, and it looks like, you know, some of the concern around the stock, because the stock's not expensive. It's a, you know, 15 PE. It's a $24 billion market cap. So it's a decent sized company, but that maybe they took a little bit of a hit from some of the weight loss drugs, like the GLP ones, and just because people are starting to think, hey, if everybody's losing weight, are they going to need that, you know, that knee replacement, that hip replacement? So that's maybe there's an opportunity here.
That's interesting. They're losing weight. They might need it less, but then they start playing pickleball and now they need it more.
That is why the knee replacement company is sponsoring pickleball tournaments. They're hoping for injuries.
Totally, dude. It's crazy. I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay, here's another one, guys. STAA called Star Surgical. Now, they specialize in, ready for it, cataract surgeries. Okay? Cataract surgeries. That, right? That's another good one for aging population. Let's see what these guys look like, how big of a company they are. Again, did very little research.
You haven't done your research. They're at a $2.2 billion market cap.
So they're not big.
They have their earnings coming out in 13 days.
I want to make something very clear. Not only are we not financial advisors and just talking about how we are thinking about this opportunity for ourselves, and we're sharing it with you guys to poke holes in, but we're at the very early stages.
Dave, zoom back out. That is one heck of a stock chart.
Yeah, this is their five-year chart where they were way up here. I have percentages turned on. I can't tell you what their price is, but it doesn't matter.
I'm saying, guys, is in in theory, on paper, these would be the nice subsectors within Jordan's overall healthcare sector that seem like they would be big beneficiaries over the next couple of decades.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My thought was to go broad with like an HCA, with a UHS, with some of those just bigger, you know, big caps, but these probably have some more juice. If they work.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah. I think they do. And then here's one, Jordan, that you pushed back on me a little bit when I first mentioned this.
Yeah, well, the companies are all terrible, first of all.
wait. Oh, in the space?
Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm about to say? You don't have any, like, blue chip
hospice companies?
Yeah.
Oh, are you trying to tell me that the hospice companies are unethical? Is that what you're trying to get
I didn't
at?
Say I'm not making any claims, sir.
Okay.
I couldn't find
it. No, it's a great industry, though.
So here's the thing.
Are there public hospice companies?
So there's one called, and I know nothing about these companies, but there's one called the Pennant Group, which is PNTG. Yeah. And there's another called ADUS Home Care Group, which is ADUS.
There's four of them, and they're all pretty.
Dude, that looks like they're doing pretty good right there.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, the stock price is doing great.
What are the market caps on these? Dave, let's take a look.
They're not
This ADUS market cap is $1.5 billion. And what was the first one?
P as in Peter, N as in Nancy, T as in Tom, G. The Pennant Group.
So they are just a $600 million company.
So these are
when we looked at that chart, we were more zoomed in. I'm backed out to a 5-year view here. So they've been down, but recently in the past year, they've been doing quite well.
So Jordan, what's wrong with these companies? Well, like, why don't you think they're quality? And I'm not saying you're wrong.
They're not quality companies. They're just small companies. And I'm nervous to talk about and put money into a company with a $600 million or a $1 billion market cap.
Well, here's the thing.
In this space, it just, you know.
Here's the thing. We've had a few really weird years, obviously, with COVID. But if we're thinking about the next 20 years, my goodness, like hospice has got to be huge. Is there a point in time in the next
there's one other thing about hospice, and that is who makes the decision on spending the money at that point? And this is dark, right? This is a dark conversation. I don't enjoy this conversation, but the individual, I could be totally wrong, so correct me, please, but I wouldn't think the individual is making the decision to go on hospice care, but maybe the child or somebody is making the decision to go on hospice care. And I would think at that point, you know, price is a factor, and you know.
But Jordan, we have $80 trillion.
I'm volunteering for hospice. As soon as I am not functional and not able to take care of myself, just take me into hospice, make me feel happy, and then pull the plug.
Yeah, No. You don't want to go to a hospice. These are hospice facilities. I want
like in-home hospice. I want high-end
person. That's like a boutique thing. That's a totally different.
I want luxury hospice care at my house.
A luxury hospice situation. That's totally different. You're making that financial decision.
Okay,
but the people that are putting people into hospice. I mean, that, you know, it's
in-home.
Again,
in-home
this is not a conversation I want to have, but. You know, you're thinking about, okay, well, I was going to pay off my house with or do I spend half of it to put mom on hospice? I mean,
But we have $80 trillion. It's not for everybody, okay?
You've got to realize that most of that $80 trillion, you know, think about it. It's the top 1% is going to have a big chunk, and then it filters down. I think.
It does, but here's the thing. Most people will not be able to afford the $140,000 to $175,000 a year for in-home hospice, okay? So there is a much larger chunk of people that do have money don't have that kind of money, but have enough money to where they want to be comfortable. Their kids don't want to take care of them or can't take care of them because they have families or they have jobs, because we all know that the younger generation, Jordan, has dual incomes. A lot of these people both the husband and wife work, okay? So a lot of times there's really not a choice. When you're looking at this situation, you're like, what do we do?
But I mean, hospice is different than, you know, than like a care facility or something. Like the hospice is, correct me if I'm wrong, hospice is more end of life care. I mean, it's like
it is, but don't
I don't know that it's any worse than the nursing home. Like the skilled nursing is not a great place to spend the rest of your life.
Yeah, I agree. I want to be in hospice.
Pull the plug.
I see the hospice industry massively expanding over the next 20 years. And if you look at that industry sector, even though these companies are relatively small, who is going to have a better chance to kind of raise capital and expand their business model? These are public companies.
Yeah, and they're, you know, with $600 million, maybe they're an acquisition target for people that are wanting to do something bigger in senior care.
Well, Jordan, so, I mean, it's the first article that I read on these hospice companies had to do with the fact that they would be M&A. Like not to get acquired, but to acquire other. There's tons of small hospices around, tons of them, right?
Consolidation deal.
Because think about it, what they do is they consolidate, then they lower expenses, right? Because they're able to kind of not have to have replication of all the various roles because they kind of just have that all worked out at the corporate level. They can lower expenses. They could they have uniform marketing, right? Uniform processes, they have better buying power with all the things that they need to do. Like, I feel like this is an industry segment that is going to get very large over the next 20 years. And I want to have some exposure to it, I think, as part of this trade. So it's at the top of my list.
All right, we are depressing people in the chat, apparently. So
okay. Sorry, guys. We had to have this with the episode. We had to have the conversation. Does anyone in the comments even have something like a fun, uplifting trade here?
What's a fun thing to do with your money when grandpa dies?
Oh my God, this is horrible. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely horrible. I can't even see the chat, Dave. I lost the chat.
Well, America's economic future is in beard oil, according to Aaron.
Beard oil?
I mean, you got millennial hipsters aging out.
Dude, can I just ask you, what is the deal with Wingstop? The Wingstop stock chart is so insane. I want to short this company. Here's the problem. I actually started to pull data because I have a lot of expensive data that I can pull. And the data on Wingstop this quarter is awesome. And I can't short them. It's awesome. Like, are they going to keep going up? What the hell is going on at Wingstop?
I don't understand. Wingstop is not a company that I ever look at. What from their September low, if I can pull up a little tool here. They're up 140% since September.
Dude,
I do love chicken wings.
I love wings too, but you know what? Like, I'm usually getting my wings delivered from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Or you go to B Dubs? Are you kidding me?
I think Wingstop is way better.
Terrible. No, Wingstop is way better than B-Dubs.
Wingstop. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I usually get it from other places too. The Buffalo Wild Wings has other stuff for my kid. That's why I order my wings from there, and it's on DoorDash.
Excuses. Troy Aikman. Didn't Troy Aikman do a deal with Wingstop? Didn't he promo him for a while?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know, but
yeah, they were the official wing of the Dallas Cowboys. I remember thinking, why does Dallas Cowboys need an official wing? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Dude, I got
Can wings. We talk about something more fun like Tesla?
No, hold on. I had the greatest wings from a place that you would not expect to get great wings from. And let me just see here. Let me look at my orders and see because, oh no, it's a local place. Sorry, I won't talk about it.
It's probably one of those ghost kitchens that is called special wings and more. Now, did you hear Elon say that he's planning to deliver an Optimus at the end of 2025, which means 2035 realistically?
Okay, so let's talk about that. That's actually not a ridiculous expectation though, because we know that at least one of the private humanoid companies that we are invested in is anticipating delivering commercialized humanoids in mid-2025 to their commercial clients. Like not pilots. They think they'll start to exit pilot programs and be in commercialized production mid-25. So the fact that Elon is saying late 25, that doesn't necessarily mean hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. That just might mean he's delivering 50 humanoids to like one of his big clients, right? That's all that it means. It's super realistic that he might do that next year. I do think that the general public that does not understand the humanoid sector doesn't realize what he's talking about when he says that. They're thinking, oh, we're going to have like production cars. Like all of a sudden we could order these things. No, he's probably talking about industrial commercialized clients. And he's probably talking about super, super low volume. Yes, that could happen by the end of next year. But that's not a surprise to me. And I don't think it's that big of a deal either.
Was it a surprise to you how much time they spent talking about distributed inference compute power and the turning the network of existing Tesla vehicles into a supercomputer for AI processing?
I think that's actually interesting. Because they do have a lot of compute between all those Teslas. If they can pull that off, it's not a terrible idea. However, I think there are companies like Apple, right, that have, you know, maybe less compute per phone, right, but have infinitely more combined compute. So if that's going to work for Tesla,
the problem with like an Apple, like if you're having your iPhone do work for Apple in the background, your battery, unless they solve the battery problem, you're not going to allow them to do that unless they're just paying you a ton of money to use your phone for compute power. The car is sitting idle in a garage plugged into a wall most of the time and could perfectly be used for that use case.
Okay, but
not plugged in, it has a giant battery that will just keep the computer running.
But what if you had some rules in place where as long as your iPhone was over 60% charge, it can use 15% of the charge for inference and you get some benefit? You get Apple Plus or something. I don't know.
There's a way that it could work. I just think that the device size of both iPads, iPhones, MacBooks, whatever you're talking about, other than like the Mac Mini that can just be left plugged in and turned on, I can't really see a huge demand from consumers for whatever the benefit of letting Apple use your thing, where I think Tesla could have a very big.
Okay. I think they're reaching though. I think it's a theoretical possibility, but the
same
way that...
Do you think there are more Teslas out there or Mac Minis, Dave? There's way more Mac Minis.
But way more... if they started loading Teslas up with extra processors purely for this use case...
I just think it's the same way that he said 12 years ago, your Teslas would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars because they're going to be making all this money for you. And like, here we are today. Is it a theoretical possibility that at some
point? They talked a lot about
that
too.
Yeah. I mean, your Tesla might make money for you theoretically at some time in the future, but now we are so far out from this stuff. We literally know nothing about the way that ecosystem is going to work and if it's even a meaningful number. So I think the fact that they spent that much time talking about that on the call is actually a terrible thing for Tesla. Like that's a stupid thing for them to be spending a lot of time about talking about when you look at all the things going on at Tesla. I feel it's a reach. It's a distraction. They're trying to distract people. And I'm not buying any of that stuff. The only thing that I'm buying right now at Tesla is, yes, I think the robo-taxi at some point is going to be massively big. Again, at some point, I don't think it's this year or next year or the year after that, or the year after that even, quite honestly. But I do think that the humanoid is it. And yeah, he said all the right things with the humanoid, but people don't believe him because he said so much crap about other stuff that was ridiculous that now no one believes Elon about the one thing that actually is real. which is,
I think that Tesla's in general, their communication strategy is flawed because they do, like, it's the complete opposite of Apple. Apple doesn't tell you a product is coming until a week before you can actually buy it on their website. Tesla tells you about the product. Oh yeah, well, we're working on this and we think it's going to be ready next year. How many times have you heard Elon Musk say next year? And we always know that means more than 1 year. And we usually, it's more like five.
And this whole thing about the Elon comp package, whatever people think about it, it's a ridiculous conversation because it's getting approved. No Tesla stockholders are not going to not approve that. It's such a ridiculous conversation. We all know it's getting approved. No one should be talking about it anymore. It's just going to happen. Okay. It's done. It's getting approved. I mean, could you imagine Tesla stockholders not approving that? Who wants that chaos? Nobody wants that chaos. The comp package will be approved. I still think this is going to be a really crappy year at Tesla. I think he's just trying to save the company in these earnings calls. And hey, the stock had already gotten beat up, is what, down 50%? So it was all priced in. And this is a little recovery bump, right? The earnings call wasn't as terrible, right, as people were afraid it might be. And they did a decent job changing the narrative. It's not exciting for me in the next few weeks, a few months, though. I'm going to wait it out on Optimus. I don't think there's much more to talk about when it comes to Tesla, guys. Honestly, it's a wait and see game. This is not the year for Tesla. This is a throwaway year for Tesla. We'll just have to wait and see what happens in 25. I mean, and hopefully the stock doesn't double between now and I get screwed having to buy
it. I hope it does. I hope you get screwed. I'm betting against you because you're betting against me.
I don't care. I don't
he's
need
not
it
betting
to
against you. He's just not betting with you.
Yeah. The cost of capital is too high. I want to say this. There is a stock that was my number one stock for the most part of 2023 that I was really fortunate to exit most of it very close to the high that has come down quite a bit. It's Celsius Energy. And I got back into Celsius Energy in a big way this last week. So I am now ultra long Celsius again. Now that could change. I actually purchase, you know, I get like a lot of data. So like if the data starts changing on Celsius, I might, you know, pull out of it again. But I really believe, like, I was at the Stars game last night, and dude, just the Celsius everywhere I go, Celsius, everyone I talk to, every vendor, every store clerk, they're like, dude, it's everything. Like, it's our top selling drink by a mile. I don't see their Jordan. I shared some stuff with you on Celsius as well, but I just think they're going to crush it this year. And I love the fact that they finally fell. I hated it when they made that big move up. I was like, dude, it moved up too quick. I want to own more, but it's back down and I'm long Celsius again. Just want to put that out there in the world. Also, Dave, early read. I know Deck was down a lot today. I don't own any Deck, but Hoka data looks really strong right now as well this quarter. So at some point we'll need to have a conversation about Hoka and Deck before earnings, especially now that the stock has kind of come back a little bit, because that stock chart was just nuts.
Yep.
But still, one of my most aggressive trades right now continues to be NVIDIA. I spent 25 hours between last Thursday and this Monday researching AI inference, what the hyperscalers are doing right now with their own inference chips, what companies like Grok, this is not Tesla's Grok, the other Grok, which is a private company, what they're doing with inference, trying to understand what the risk factors are for NVIDIA this year. And I kind of walked away thinking, God, I love NVIDIA more after that research than I did before. There are some risk factors long-term with the inference side of the business, right? So I definitely, on the hyperscaler side, those guys are going to try to do their own inference as much as possible. but I don't even think that it matters. And we saw it yesterday on Meta's call, right? Like, Meta's down because they're increasing their budget primarily a little bit, I think, because of the legal issues they're having over in Europe, but primarily to expand their AI infrastructure. And they didn't really go into detail, but we know that a big, big chunk of that is to buy into the Blackwell platform at NVIDIA. Could you even imagine those conversations right now at NVIDIA for this Blackwell release? And by the way, they delivered the first one yesterday to OpenAI. Did you guys see that pic?
Twitter? Yeah, I saw the pictures.
I know everybody's really nervous about NVIDIA, but I'm not. They're not shaking me out. I'm in NVIDIA, and I might even add more before earnings. We'll see. I don't care. I'm sorry. I know those weren't wealth transfer stocks, but
now this is the part of this show where we just go off the rails and talk about whatever. I mean, about 10 minutes in, that pretty much happens every time.
Yeah.
Hey, do we have anything else we want to hit before we say goodbye?
I'm looking through comments here. People are asking about InMode. Guys, I'm not doing the InMode thing because interest rates are too high, and I do have a concern about doctors not wanting to finance that equipment at the really high interest rates. And I'm a little concerned on InMode still. So I have not jumped back into InMode.
There's somebody asking about Shark Ninja. I love Shark Ninja, but I have not looked at them since in the past, I think, 6 months. So I need to take a look before I can say anything.
Yeah.
Hopeful.
Jordan, I pulled data on them and it was good, but it wasn't like so good that I don't know. I've yet to pull the trigger on those guys.
Because they had the listing, right? So they listed in, was it on the NYSE? Is that what they did?
Yeah.
And it seemed expensive at that point. So I didn't jump in. I need to readdress Shark Ninja.
So I'm on a text thread with Alton Hankowitz and Christian, who's his business partner, and we were they keep talking about this Zen, you know,
Chris. I think you might have someone using your Wi-Fi in
the Zen.
Yeah, your Wi-Fi is.
We lost you.
Poor.
No, I'm direct connected. Okay, so anyway, I'm on this text thread where we're talking about Zen with Austin Hankowitz and his business partner Christian.
Like lip pillows?
No, Zen. You know the
we talked about this last week.
Yeah, the lip pillow.
We talked about last week.
Yeah.
And I'm still like not totally convinced that it's bigger than the market believes it's going to be, but I did start watching a lot of videos. And it does look like this stuff is literally like just selling out everywhere. Yeah. So I think I will admit that maybe I blew it off too quickly and I probably need to take a little bit more time and maybe the community can take a little bit more time looking into Zen. In fact, one thing that's super interesting, there's a TikTok that went crazy viral. I'll send to you guys. And
so Philip Morris just had earnings, by the way, and Zen obviously was doing great. They've got a vape category too that they own, and that apparently was doing really well.
Yeah, guys, you all have to check that TikTok. I just said
like 3% after earnings. The stock is not, it's not a growth stock. It's a bond, right? You're just buying your 6% dividend. I don't see anything to invest in here unless you want that 6% dividend.
So they have this rewards program on the cans. And I just sent you guys this video. It's hilarious. And all these girlfriends and wives of the guys that use Zen are going around collecting the cans and registering the rewards in, right? And then they're buying like purses and stuff like that with the rewards program. And it's gone crazy viral on TikTok, which is just so, so weird. Here, is that it?
TikTok wants me to pass a captcha before I can do anything. Hang on.
Oh,
TikTok okay. doesn't like you to use a browser. It wants you to use the phone.
I know.
But by the way, speaking of TikTok, right? So in my head, there's a 0% chance TikTok doesn't get acquired. This TikTok's not going anywhere. Is this it?
Yeah, this is it.
Can you get audio?
I don't think I can share the sound though.
Oh, okay.
But this is
so
just,
yeah, they're just scanning in
8 seconds.
Then facts. But it's cool because it's become kind of a viral thing.
No, is this a product you use that much of?
By the way, whoever has a boyfriend and he has that many empty Zin cans, I get him screened for oral cancer. I'm just, you know.
Wait, but what's in it? Nicotine only, right? And there's no tobacco.
So I was, right? Look, yeah, it's nicotine, so it doesn't have tobacco, which is good. Maybe it's a better alternative than tobacco. I have heard some dentists say that there, you know, you can get cancer from just a constant irritant. And so if you're putting that pouch in the same place over and over again, just that constant irritation can be a cause of cancer. And so just because it doesn't have tobacco in it doesn't mean that it's this healthy alternative. I think people need to, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I would watch out.
Wait, you're not a doctor?
No, it turns out I'm not.
Well, then you have some explaining to do. No,
that's right.
They won't let me in until I register. I just can't do anything right today.
TikTok's not going away, though, because people are talking about like the meta trade. If it goes away, it's not going away. There's no way that this thing doesn't get sold. There's no way that China is going to be like, well, screw you. We're just not going to sell it and we'll shut it down. I don't think that happens. I could be wrong.
I just don't understand what is China doing with the how much TikTok I watch type data. That I haven't given TikTok any personally identifiable information. What I browse is somehow going to cause a national security concern?
No, the conspiracy theory, Dave, is that they can basically control the minds of our youth by tweaking the algorithm to show them certain things and not other things. So if they want to promote an anti-America type of, you know, messaging, they can promote that or support that with the algorithm. And if they want to promote things that are pro-China, they can do that, right? So I understand the concern. That said, as someone that probably uses TikTok more than anyone on earth, multiple hours a day.
And I will say you've become way more pro-China in the past couple of months since using so much TikTok. I don't know why you're so pro-China.
Are you pro-China?
This is really ridiculous. I mean,
dude, like, how do you think any of our, where are we going to sell our stuff? I mean, do you realize that every American company that we're invested in, one of the biggest things that they go over every
by the way, I'm joking.
China's doing.
I'm pro people, Chris.
Yes.
No matter what nationality.
Me too, man. Me too. And so you got to realize not only do we source everything there, which that could change, fine, but we now sell, we've taken all of our brands because we've run out of places to put Burger Kings. Okay, so what do? We had to start putting Burger Kings in China so that when we're invested in Burger King, we could make more money, right? Like,
well, this is why you have to pay attention to China. This is what's going on at Tesla right now, is that they thought that they were going to sell a lot more cars in China than they're currently selling, but it turns out that there is enormous EV competition in China. And so that's one of the headwinds that Tesla's running into right now.
I mean, of course there's EV headwinds in China. It's China. Yeah. I mean, they could pump out cars, right? Like EVs,
pump them out.
If you think about it, once you start getting into the EV manufacturing world, it's actually way easier, not harder, to then start to scale out EVs if you're a Chinese auto manufacturer. So it makes a lot of sense. I don't know why that was a surprise, right, to anyone. Again, it's the car industry. It sucks. Like I've been saying this to people.
But that was one of the areas of growth for Tesla, right? And I think that, you know, when you just draw a chart up and to the right and say, "Oh, China profit," right? That can get you into trouble.
Yeah, because China's good at doing stuff like that. You know what they're not as good at is like Burger King and KFC and all the cool stuff that they love that we do here. Because America is at the top of the pyramid when it comes to brand, right? And it comes to culture.
And you're saying you would rather have Burger King than Chinese
Look
food?
At it over it. Look at our brands over there, does Jordan. They kill. They crush. They crush it. They love it. It's wild. Brands here that have fallen flat that people don't even appreciate anymore, that they're like, they crush it over in China. I think it's really important for most American companies to have access to China as a sales channel. I mean, just look at the population in China. It's good for us as investors, and it concerns me if we kind of get this into this tit for tat war of we're not going to let you sell that over here, and they're like, okay, we're going to, you know, tax you or not let you do that over in China. That's a net negative for us. So that's my concern on the whole TikTok thing, and I hope it doesn't go down that road. Kava, I don't get Kava, and I know I have a very limited window into Kava, but Dave, do you know the Kava in Snyder Plaza? It is empty all the time. So I know that's just
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Kava is, I want to say, like, is it Mediterranean? But it's basically a healthy food, fast.
Is it the Chipotle of Mediterranean food?
Yeah, so they took over a brand in Dallas that used to make it. It was like Greek healthy place in Center Plaza. They acquired that whole company, and Kava basically just makes, it's like healthy fast.
Is this a local company or is this a?
No, they're all over. They're national.
This is totally, it's the Chipotle of Mediterranean food.
Yeah, but my limited visibility into the local one here, there's never anybody in there. And that just doesn't feel like something I can get excited about. I don't know. I'm generally not long on the restaurant food and that industry. I think that industry is terrible. I'm in the industry. I happen to have one good restaurant, but I think the cost inflation is horrific in that sector. And I just generally don't want to be part of it. High valuations, people are saying. Oh, by the way, do you see Foxtrot is out of business?
Yeah.
Is that the coffee shop that you were going to?
That was my office, man.
Foxtrot's your office? Yeah, I thought you were going to that other place.
No, that's in the morning. I go to Foxtrot in the afternoons to have my...
Dude, I'll tell you what, the millennials on TikTok are so happy to see Foxtrot go under. They looked at it as like this you know, tech bro corporate greed.
It was
organization. It was. Yeah. I never knew about it. I didn't know that's what it was.
So if for those of y'all don't know Foxtrot, just this is all you need to know. Raised $160 million to build hybrid coffee shop, high end markets with candy and wine and like fancy food. The problem is I worked there for multiple hours a day, almost every day, the last few years. The footprint of a Foxtrot is triple to quadruple the size of a Starbucks, and the revenue is like one quarter to one third of Starbucks. So how anybody thought that was ever going to make sense? And they tried pitching it as, but we're going to be this kind of virtual model, and we're going to do lots of deliveries, and you can order your food on the app and like have it delivered or pick it up. Like what? Yeah. Dude, that doesn't mean anything. Everybody does that.
That is our like local neighborhood shopping center. I never went into that Foxtrot, and I love the restaurant right across from it.
But Dave, I would go in there and I would spend $3.50 and then work for 3 or 4 hours. And that's what everybody did there. And I would watch the line every once in a while. Someone would walk up and spend $5. And the rent there must have been, I'm going to assume that the rent there is $25,000 a month, maybe $30,000 a month. They got the most prestigious places to put those things in.
Yeah.
They spent so much money on each one of them in terms of design, and equipment.
Yeah, it looked nice.
Oh, patios with umbrellas and cushions. And it was my dream office for $3 a day, $3 to $50 a day. And it's gone. I don't know what I'm going to do.
So where are you going to work now?
I have no idea. I don't know. I have my mornings worked out at the coffee shop, but I no longer have an afternoon office. I don't know.
You're just going to have to retire, I guess.
You know what I did?
No more afternoon work.
You know what I did? I went there and I just sat on, even though it was closed, I just sat on, they didn't remove the cushions yet. I just sat outside and worked. And I used my phone as Wi-Fi. But now they removed it. They're gone.
You should have your kids. Yeah,
they
like,
saw open you up and they're a, like, no, we can't have like, vagrants here.
You should have your kids like open up a lemonade stand at that location with their existing seating and just, I bet they would do so much better than, because they're not paying any rent. Think about getting about the same amount of traffic without any overhead.
Oh my God. I know. Oh, by the way, Jacob Crowley, Lulu, I haven't really pulled data on Lulu recently. Obviously they had a terrible quarter. It feels like Lulu might be getting to that point where the competition started to finally get.
Yeah, I was about to say, man, there is a lot of comp right now.
And by the way, expected value. Thank you. Zoe's Kitchen is who Kava acquired.
I had heard of them.
Yeah,
that's just a.
There's nothing sexy or interesting about that business. I don't know why Wall Street is so hyped on it. Is it another Foxtrot in hiding? Maybe. Yeah, I gotta go figure out my work situation, Dave, for today.
All right, let me know where you're gonna end up. I'm curious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll short them.
By the way, Crocs, I am out of Crocs. I will not touch Crocs right now because I just don't have good visibility into what's happening with their Hey Dude line. We've talked about this before. So at the moment, I'm not in Crocs. Quite honestly, guys, I sold my Elf as well. I'm not saying I won't buy back into Elf, but while that we're in the middle of this rocky market, I'm kind of out of my positions until I could pull data closer to earnings. And I don't know when Elf earnings are. I might get back into Elf going into earnings. But yeah, I didn't want to be overexposed and too levered in this market, which is looking good today, not being overlevered. I did lever myself up in Celsius though, so we'll see how that goes. and Nvidia is my number two position. Any other questions, guys?
Anyone buying Meta today on their big pullback?
I just don't. I don't have a reason to buy Meta.
No. I don't.
I feel like if you're looking to get into another AI play,
but what does that mean? Like AI? Like, okay, I'll give you a perfect example, Dave. So Meta put their AI chatbot on all of their Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
And does anybody even care talking about it? Like, it's just their chatbot. Like, it's just, does anyone care? So, like, the only thing that Meta, you can make a great case that Meta will be able to leverage AI to optimize their advertising engine to an extent that nobody else will be able to compete with Meta, because Meta, once that's optimized, and by the way, Meta used to have a really good advertising engine and then it all fell apart due to the law changes, right? When you had to like pull out all the targeting and dynamic stuff. And maybe Meta can now overlay this AI to synthesize advertising for their customers to be so precise and return such good, you know, engagement levels that they'll be able to get a bigger chunk of the advertising dollars, because advertising will work so well on Facebook and Instagram. But you also have to then believe that Facebook, which is in Instagram, will continue to maintain their general consumer engagement levels to believe in that thesis. I'm not necessarily bought into that yet, right? Like I saw what happened with TikTok, and who knows what the next thing is. can Zuck really keep the consumer attention that he needs to optimize the advertising dollars on the back end? That's the big question. And then when you talk about Google, like, I can't get myself to invest in Google because I'm like crapping my pants thinking about what happens when AI becomes the go-to place for everyone to do all of their web search, which has happened to me. Guys, I literally don't use Google anymore. I stopped using it almost entirely. So when the rest of the world does what I just did and Google loses 80-85% of their legacy advertising business, how much of that can they replace with AI? That's a risk factor to me. And I don't know why everyone else doesn't see that as the huge risk factor that it is. I'm not saying so that
you, Google... Are you using ChatGPT in place of search? Because it's not up to date with current information. What are you using as your search engine replacement?
No, I use Google, baby. No, I don't use ChatGPT. I'll use ChatGPT if I'm trying to like formulate something. But if I'm looking for like a physical location, I use Google Maps. If I'm looking for anything technical, Google is way better.
Okay, hold on. First of all, ChatGPT pulls in Bing, real-time information, and I don't care what it pulls in. 90% of the time, though, it gets me what I need. It pulls.
But because you've stopped using Google, you haven't seen that, and it's kind of annoying, actually. Every Google search you do now is a, what is their Bard replacement, Gemini summary of something, followed by search results. So they've fully done exactly what you're looking to do, or what you do in ChatGPT is now just a built into Google.
I understand that. But what I'm trying to say is there are now other, did you see the company this week that just got valued at over $1 billion? They're just another AI, pure AI search company. There's lots of AI search now that does not necessarily require all those advertisers to conduct that sort of proper search. So let's see where it's headed.
You know what I don't AI search something. I Google it.
Can Google it, Jordan.
I need to try Perplexity.
Perplexity. But now if Google is giving you a different output that is different from the past, that is then a risk for their advertisers once everybody moves to that. So I don't know how that's going to impact Google positively or negatively yet. And I want to wait it out until I can figure out, is AI a net positive or net negative for Google's legacy advertising business? No one's answered that question yet. And Google is about to make the switch. You know this, right? In like 2 months, Google is like switching their entire search platform to be AI centric now, and it's going to operate completely differently. It's not going to be based on the kind of legacy format that they've been using for 20 years. We have no idea what the implications of that are going to be for Google's revenue model, but they're forced into doing it. They have to.
Yeah. That's Perplexity search. Came up with much the same result that Google did. I just searched for one of the top US brands in China, according to most recent data, and it came up with GM, Apple, Nike, Starbucks, Microsoft, Boeing. But that's exactly what Google did when I searched for it on this.
Okay, but let me ask you this. You know that there's massive pushback against Google as a right, like the woke thing that happened a month ago with their AI. Like, what happens when we have a dozen search tools that you can use, right? That all basically look the same AI. Like the Robin Hood of search comes out, right? And they all work perfectly fine. And you have a bunch of conservatives that are like, don't use Google, now use it. And they just lost 20%, 15% even of their user base because you don't need to use Google anymore. And now people are getting political.
Hold on. You're saying Google lost 15% of their user base? That's not correct.
No, Jordan.
This is a hypothetical.
No, hypothetical. What I'm saying is, right now, you have to use Google, right? Everyone has to use it. But we already know that there was major pushback from the conservative movement, what, a month ago, 2 months ago,
on the
Gemini. What?
So
nobody cares what they think.
So to bring this back to the generational wealth transfer, the woke generation may not want to use Google.
Jordan, yeah. There might be people that think that Google is too conservative. There might be people that think Google is too woke. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying is today you have no option. If a year from now you have Perplexity and a dozen great AI search options that give you everything you want on your app.
You can use Bing if you wanted to. It's just terrible, right? It's
no,
it's
no, no. Because the legacy...
Google's bread and butter.
Jordan, the reason why it's terrible is because of the legacy search structure, the way that it works, you need all of that data. You need a bidding platform. You need every advertiser in the world basically bidding in your platform so you get diversity of search results, right? And very few people were doing that on Bing. Every business in the world was doing that on Google. Now, fast forward a year when we don't even have that anymore. It's not necessary to have that, right? It changes the entire dynamic. Also, remember this. Part of the reason why Google is where they are, do you know how much Google pays Apple right now to get on iPhone? It's insane. What happens if Apple says, you know what? We want to buy Perplexity.
Now that's, and now that's Apple literally the only risk that you stated that I think is legitimate.
The what?
That's the biggest risk.
Yeah. I mean, dude, like instantly Apple's like, you know what? We have our own search, but like, or maybe they continue with Google because they buy them out. But I think it's, all I'm saying here is that there are risk factors that come with massive change like this. I'm not saying they're going to be horrific for Google or great for Google. All I'm saying is I think the market is underplaying the amount of risk that Google has this next year. And they are an incumbent. Google has proven to us that they do not move quickly. Look at how Google has behaved this last year. They are not a sharp, quick, like company. Like they are a huge incumbent. Like all the rumors coming out about Google right now
is they're huge.
They are, huge. But I'm actually kind of surprised a company of that size was able to get so many AI things into actual customer facing products as quickly as they did.
Well, because they've been working on them for a long time. They've just not been pushing them forward.
They've been working on them forever. But what happened with the search results when you are seeing, like, you know, you're searching for Vikings and none of them are white, right? Like stuff like that. It's just that
Vikings. Why are we searching for Vikings?
Do you not remember
that was the whole Google AI?
This is huge. This was like the story for 2 weeks straight. They had basically. What?
Am I out of touch?
Yes.
You were out of touch. This was several months ago, though, so you may have just been like on vacation.
Didn't they have to pull back the entire platform?
Yeah. So what happened? I'm sorry.
So Google's AI-based image generation platform basically replaced had a diverse group of people represented when you searched for like, or had it generate an image of humans. So if you were to search for something historically significant that would have been white people, they were filling it in with people of color in these computer generated images. So Chris is saying Viking. So they would have had like a mixed race group of Vikings.
Yeah,
because their algorithm was so tweaked for diversity,
and
just scrapped the whole platform.
It didn't have enough data on actual. Who knows?
Jordan, there was so much backlash on Google. It was potentially the most threatening thing to happen to Google in 20 years. Like it was a really big deal. And Google can't. What I'm saying is, there's not really an alternate. For Google, we all know that we just use what's on our iPhone or whatever, right? Or you Google it, right? No one really cares.
Well, and Googling it, as soon as Perplexity can figure out a way to become a verb, it's just not Perplexity. Just doesn't roll off the tongue. Plex it. I'm going to go plex it.
It's not about Perplexity. It's about the fact that some random. It's about the fact that some random company just started up an AI search engine that Dave just used and said gave him the same result as Google, and they're just a startup with like 50 employees. I'm saying,
though, but like, why am I going to switch to something that just gives me the same results as Google, and I'm just going to Google?
How about this? Apple just says, you know what? Our search now is AI, and it works better than anything that's ever existed. No one everyone that's on an iPhone.
I guarantee, if Apple switches from Google to Perplexity, I will download some Google app and then start Googling stuff that way.
No,
Jordan, I will go to the internet. Safari, type in Google, and then use it.
It's Jordan, insane. It has nothing to do with Perplexity. Apple might have its own search that they come out with, their AI. And it might be so much better than the random Google search. You might end up having... What?
Dave said it's about the same.
That's one search. It came up with pretty much the same results in one search. But now I'm asking, what is the verb form of Perplexity to Perplexity? And we'll see what it says. It's not doing anything.
I think you are crazy if you think that Google just has a stranglehold on how we seek out information for the next 30 years. That's insane. Like in an AI world, everything changes. And I do not think... I think Google potentially loses that. I just don't
like the term AI with what's going on right now. It's not AI. We have language models. We have predictive AI. We have predictive language models. We don't have AI. Stop with the AI.
Okay. Fine. True. But it... What I'm trying to tell you is...
Perplexity is recommending that if you want to use perplex as a verb... you would say, I need to perplex that topic. I will perplex that question. That's according to Perplexity itself. Now, I don't know if that's been run through their brand group, because I know that when back in the 90s when I worked at Yahoo, Yahoo became a verb, and the brand department wanted you to say, no, we want to Yahoo search it. Okay. Go to Yahoo and search. They didn't want Yahoo to be a verb for some reason.
I am telling you right now, Jordan, that 15 to 20% of the U.S. population, because of what happened 2 months ago, really has Google on their hit list. Like, they'd hate Google. I'm telling you.
That's like 50 million people, Chris.
That's a crap
like
load.
60 million. You think 60 million people have some sort of vendetta against Google right now?
Massive. Yes, I do. I do.
There's no way 60 million people even think about Google regularly.
I think
of the people who are active on Chris's X feed, that is probably true. About 15% of the people who know anything about anything probably do. But just the general user who's Googling stuff has
doesn't mean
anything.
And even if they are upset with Google, I bet they still use it.
Well, yeah, today. Agreed. All I'm saying is these are now risk factors in the future, is all I'm saying.
Yeah,
like it is really hard as a company to kind of stay in that neutral stance in the current political environment that we're in as a country, as a world. Jordan, I don't think you realize how big of a deal this is. Like it is real. It's a real risk. It's a lot of people.
People get hurt feelings because some random AI image generator generated a Viking the wrong color. I mean, like,
if you look at the number of impressions that's Dave, can we pull up how many impressions that story got? It was insane, Jordan.
It was insane.
And by the way, this is not just a US thing, this is a global thing. This is happening in Europe. There's this whole conservative movement around the world. Look at governments right now. We are looking at governments changing all around the world to these like far, far right because of this movement.
Well, Chris, you're right. And it's not just national governments, it's local governments too. And so you see this far right swing. And it's very concerning.
I think it is. Listen, I'm not being political about it. I'm just analyzing this as an investor, period. And I'm telling you that it is a big, big deal. It's a risk factor. And it would make me nervous long-term in Google. It's so weird. The whole thing
is
so weird.
This is an illustration of 1943 German soldiers.
It's not about the image. It's about the fact that we now know as a society that the people that control the AI, Jordan, I'm going to use the word AI for a minute, but the people that control the AI have the ability to tweak the weights and tweak the stuff to make this happen.
Yeah, I just don't. Maybe they're tweaking certain things to be diverse or whatever, and they didn't realize what impact that could have to like historical. I mean, it's
And but as a use case they didn't test for.
But what I'm saying is this is something, Jordan, this is something that you could actually see. How many things can you that aren't as obvious to the regular person that you don't necessarily see, but that they're tilting, right, with weights and things on their end? This is the concern, is that whoever controls that AI, if it's not open source, right, like whoever controls it, has the ability to
language model, rewrite history. Visual model. Like, they're not AI. They're not intelligent. They're just models, right? And so, okay, yeah, of but, course but there they, are people
oh, the model. Fine,
we can control fine. These models.
Fine. But they can control the weighting in the model, and they control the variables to basically rewrite history, right? And rewrite what the world, if, especially if they're controlling all the information on search, right? Because right now, the information on search still mostly comes from other websites that people are bidding for placement and the ones that get the best engagement. And by the way, that model we know is broken too, right? Because that model has basically become a model of where if you Google something, you know what comes up? People rewrite content like they wrote it yesterday. They have algos that are making new stories every day. Oh, we just
people rewriting history has been going on since there was history, right?
Yeah, I mean,
history's been politicized and used for rhetorical goals. There's no such thing as pure, like,
you're right,
unadulterated history. So get off your high horse about that.
Okay, you're totally correct about that. Okay, you're totally correct about that. But now it's more transparent into how we're seeing how it's done, right?
Well, I think people are hip and they're aware of what's going on. Yeah.
And it's kind of happening.
Buying what's coming at them, they actually realize, oh, hold on. We actually know that history. Why are we being retold in a different way?
And it's happening in real time, and it's happening publicly, whereas a textbook that had a political agenda when it was published isn't something that everyone has access to. It's only the random school kids who happen to be reading that version of history that would know that this is a different take on actual history.
And also now these companies are multi-trillion dollar companies at risk, right? Because like when you have optionality in the past, Jordan, we didn't really have optionality beyond which encyclopedia set to buy, right? In the 80s and 90s. And then eventually, are we going to watch NBC or ABC or CBS, right? Or are we going to watch eventually CNN or Fox? But now, once you have infinite amounts of optionality, couldn't you potentially see a day when you have people saying, you know what, if you're conservative, do not get your information from this chatbot that Google makes
I think that already happens, just not maybe a chatbot, but
if the chatbot becomes the window to information, and the chatbot is what basically that legacy industry is why Google is worth almost $2 trillion, right? And so if you now basically break that up between a dozen chatbots give you all your information.
So you're saying that basically introducing these models puts risk on their revenue stream because now there's potential for bias that might not have been there when it was just serving up web pages. And I get that.
All I'm saying is it allows you optionality to use whatever the Perplexity or Apple's future one or Amazon's future one or whatever it is, right? Like, before they had such a high moat that you could not create another Google if you tried to do it, which Microsoft did with Bing. If they had a better name, it might have worked, by the way. But what Microsoft did with Bing, and they just couldn't get enough businesses to participate in Bing, right? To make it to where it was robust. So Google had the moat. But if you no longer need businesses and entities to proactively enter stuff into your system, then you lose the moat. Now anybody can go out and use language models, okay? Or whatever the hell you're calling them, to basically give you the information.
I invented the term language model.
but what I'm saying is, you have optionality. No one's talking about this. Google could end up losing 50% of its business in the next 10 years. Literally 50%. It could be wiped away in the next 5 to 10 years. And not enough people are concerned about that, I don't think. That's why I'm not invested in Google. Period. That's why I meant to say.
Good luck to the clips editor who's going to have to condense down why you're not invested in Google, because that was a roundabout conversation.
By the way, Chris put on here, he goes, if you want good, wealth transfer trades, rewind 30 minutes. I'm like, no, rewind an hour and a half.
I meant rewind to the first 30 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, the first 30 minutes, yeah. Because we were really on topic there at the beginning. But this is dumb money. This is how we operate. If you don't like this, you're in the wrong place. And I will tell you that we've steadily been gaining viewers throughout this entire random discussion. So apparently people don't mind the randomness and off-topic tangents.
So I probably do need to go have my coffee with my dog before that coffee shop closes down, like Foxtrot. Well, I still have a place to work.
You should, I'm telling you, bring like a pitcher, like a pitcher of coffee with you, and just give it away to the other former people who show up there.
Oh man. All right. And anything else, guys?
That's gonna do it for this one. We are right under an hour and a half of our 30-minute show. So thank you so much for sticking with us to the very end. We'll be back hopefully next week with an all new episode. Chris has promised us a way that he is making $100,000 out of thin air without any effort. And he's going to reveal how that happens on our next Dumb Money Live.